Oh, yes, Jonathan. Please, come in. Oh, where's Mina?
Here I am, Jack. Sorry, but I needed a minute to arrange all the papers and to get Quincy to bed.
It's quite all right, my dear.
Now, watch with your boy. You're in charge.
Well, if you don't mind, I'd like to sit down at the table where I've arranged the gramophone.
You mean over here?
Yeah. Mina, if you would place yourself here, and Jonathan, you here.
Is this about right?
Right. You needn't lean forward. The recording horn will catch your voice admirably. Now, what I'd like to do is this.
Yes?
Before we transcribe in full all of our notes, diaries, and journals, I'd like us to take the material we've edited so far and dictate them onto a series of recording cylinders.
Hmm.
You know, once assembled thusly into a workable format, Mina, I'd like you, if you'd be so kind, to type them. And this typed version then can act as an outline of sorts onto which we can add, subtract, and rearrange our information.
Mm-hmm. Splendid.
Marvelous idea.
Well, now then, how'd you work this thing, Jack?
I'll operate it for you, Jonathan. I think you'd be best to start, since yours were the earliest experiences.
Yes, right. I agree, yes.
Do you have your notes?
Here, I've got them.
All right. You know, this may be a rather painful thing to dredge up all these memories after all this time. Are you both certain you want to go through with it?
Oh, goodness, Dr. Seward, after what we've been through, I fancy it would be silly after it's all over to suddenly become squeamish.
Good girl. How about you, Donald?
Well, if I didn't think it was important, I wouldn't be here.
Right. It's settled then. Here, let me just... There. If you don't mind, I'll just start off with a short prefatory remark.
Go right ahead. Go ahead.
How this information has been placed in sequence will be manifest in the review of it. All needless matters have been eliminated so that a history which is almost at variance with the possibilities of later-day belief may stand forth as simple fact. There is throughout no statement of past things wherein memory may err, for all records chosen are exactly contemporary. Also, they are given from the standpoints and within the range of knowledge of those who made them. We know this is the 19th century, and we don't expect this account to be readily believed. But I assure you that the agonies we have suffered, the evil we have witnessed, are absolutely real. It is then the true object of this chronicle to detail in full, for the benefit of those who would be, what we know of the serious threat that was posed to our countrymen by the insidious Count Dracula.
NPR presents the National Radio Theater of Chicago production of Dracula, a dramatization of Bram Stoker's famous novel featuring Nicholas Ruddle, Vernon Piven, Sherry Nerons, and Miklos Simon.
5th of May. I must have been asleep. For certainly, if I had been fully awake, I must have noticed the approach to such a remarkable place. In the gloom, the courtyard looked of considerable size. As I stood between the carriage and the massive door, the driver jumped into his seat and shook the reins. I stood in silence where I was, for I did not know what to do. Of bell or knocker, there was no sign. Through these frowning walls and dark window openings, it was not likely that my voice could penetrate. The time I waited seemed endless.
Welcome to my heart. Enter freely and of your own will.
Thus spoke a tall old man, clean-shaven save for a long white moustache, and clad in black from head to foot.
Welcome to my house. Come freely, go safely, and leave something of the happiness you bring.
Count Dracula?
I am Dracula. And I bid you welcome, Mr. Harker, to my house. Come in. The night air is chill, and you must need to eat and drink.
Well, thank you, sir.
No.
Oh, please, let me...
I'll take your
luggage. But please,
sir. But, nay, sir, you are my guest. It is late, and my people are not available. Let me see to your comfort myself. Come with me. I will show you where you may refresh yourself, and afterwards where you will find yourself. Excuse me that I did not join you at supper, Mr. Harker. I have dined already and do not sup.
Oh, that's quite all right, sir.
Pray, sit here by the fire near me.
Well, certainly. Thank you. I've brought this communication from my employer, Mr. Hawkins, pertaining to your purchase of the Carfax estate.
Thank you so much, Mr. Harker.
Oh, you're quite welcome. I do hope everything is in order.
Quite. Mr. Hawkins writes, I much regret that an attack of gout forbids absolutely any traveling, but I am happy to say I can send a sufficient substitute, one in whom I have every possible confidence. My dear friend, Mr. Hawkins, thinks very highly of you.
Well, I practically grew up in his service. He paid for my education and he taught me the law.
Mr. Hawkins has put me in good hands.
Well, I appreciate your confidence, sir.
As you see, I have many books and pamphlets on your country. And they have been good friends to me ever since I had the idea of going there. I long to go through the crowded streets, to be in the midst of the whirl and the rush of humanity, to share its life, its change, its death. But alas, as yet I only know your tongue through books. You shall, I trust, rest here with me a while so that I may learn the English intonation.
Well, I'm at your disposal, Count Dracula. I wonder then, if I'm to be here with you for several days, if I may be permitted... I'm not familiar with your customs and do not know how free I should allow myself to be in coming and going through your castle.
You may go anywhere you wish, except where the doors are locked. Where, of course, you will not wish to go.
But of course.
You may see some strange things about you, but remember, there is reason that all things are as they are.
Oh, I'm sure of it, sir.
We are in Transylvania. And Transylvania is not England. Our ways are not your ways, and there shall be to you many strange things.
Well, sir, my experiences up to now confirm what you say.
Oh, so you have already had an adventure?
Several.
Several? Of what nature, if I may ask?
Well, firstly, your villagers apparently are tremendously superstitious.
Yes. Very superstitious.
Well, from the inn in Bastrita, I boarded a diligence that was to take me to Borgo Pass, where I was to meet your coachman. Mm. Well, the passengers, upon hearing of my destination, attempted to prevent my disembarking at the pass.
Did they?
Yes. Yes, one of them gave me this crucifix as a talisman. Now, it's rather quaint. Take a look at it.
Thank you. In these mountains, they are quite ordinary.
Oh, I see. Well, the passengers kept referring to several words over and over, and I could not recognize them. Could you possibly tell me their meaning?
What are the words?
I believe one of them was, Vrolok. What's it, Vrkozlak?
Vrkolak. It is a Romanian word.
Ah.
It is a man who turns into an animal.
A werewolf?
Exactly.
That's very curious. And there were a beastly number of wolves about, howling like madness itself, very close to the Caliche, too.
Come. Tell me of London, of the house you have procured for me.
Yes, of course, I'm sorry. Mr. Hawkins entrusted me with hunting out a suitable property, and finally I came across one in Purfleet, as seemed to be required. It's surrounded by a high wall of ancient structure built of heavy stones. The estate is called Carfax, as you know. It contains in all some 20 acres. Mm. There are but a few houses close at hand, one being a private lunatic asylum. It's not, however, visible from the grounds.
I'm glad it is old and big. I love the shade and the shadow, and would be alone with my thoughts when I may. You have, I trust, brought the necessary papers.
Ah, yes, certainly. They're in my room.
We can take care of all that tomorrow. For I perceive, my friend Harker, that you are tired. And I, too, wish to retire.
Yes. Well, we've been up a considerable time. Why? It's almost daylight. Those wolves again.
Listen to them. The children of the night. What music they make.
Oh, sir. You dwellers in the city cannot enter into the feelings of the hunter. But come. Your bedroom is all ready, and tomorrow you shall sleep as late as you wish. I have to be away till the afternoon. So, sleep well.
I only slept a few hours, and feeling that I could not sleep more, got up. I had hung my shaving glass by the window and was just beginning to shave. Suddenly, though I saw no one in the glass behind me, I felt a hand on my shoulder.
Good morning.
Oh, your throat. Oh, you still wear the crucifix. Take care how you cut yourself. It is more dangerous than you think in this country. And this wretched thing, this glass, has done the mischief.
Count! Count!
You look out! You broke it! Count!
Count? He's gone. Well, that's a pretty how-do-you-do. How the devil am I going to shave now? I have been here for some days now, and have not seen a living soul save for the Count. He engages me in conversation until nearly sunup, and then disappears for the greater part of the day. I am completely incommunicado with the world outside these walls. The castle is on the verge of a terrible precipice, and there are doors everywhere, and all locked and bolted. The castle is a veritable prison, and I am a prisoner. What does this mean? What can I do? I must be cautious. I must examine this matter and try to make up my mind about it. Time? Yes, in the meantime, I must find out all I can about Count Dracula. But I must not engage his suspicion.
For in our veins flows the blood of many brave races who fought as the lion fights for lordship. Who was it but one of my own race who, as voivode, crossed the Danube and beat the Turk on his own ground? This was a Dracula, indeed. Was it not this Dracula who inspired that other of his race, who in a later age again and again brought his forces over the great river into Turkuland, who, when he was beaten back, came again and again, though he had to come alone from the bloody field? Oh, young sir, the Sakes and the Draculas, as their heart's blood, their brains and their swords, can boast a record that the Habsburgs and the Romanovs can never reach. The warlike days are over, and glories of the great races are as a tale that is told. In these days of dishonorable peace, blood is too precious a thing. How is your cut healing, Mr. Harker?
But it is growing late. It is almost sunup. I have some questions I must put to you about my new London home. Carfax, is it?
Carfax, yes.
Tell me, my friend, is it possible for a gentleman in England to retain more than one solicitor?
Of course. And such is often done by men of business who do not like the whole of their affairs to be known by any one person.
Good. Pray, Mr. Harker, have you written to our friend, Mr. Peter Hawkins, or to any other?
Frankly, no. And I may tell you outright that I haven't seen much opportunity of sending letters to anybody.
Then write now, my young friend. Write to our friend and to any other, and say, if it will please you, that you shall stay with me until a month from now.
What?
You wish me to stay so long?
Oh, I desire it much.
Oh, but I...
Nay, I will take no refusal. When your master, employer, what you will, engaged that someone should come on his behalf, it was understood that my needs only were to be consulted. I have not stinted. Is it not so?
As you wish.
I pray you, my young good friend, that you will not discourse of thanks other than business in your letters. It will doubtless please your friends to know that you are well and that you look forward to getting home to them. Is it not so?
I have written the correspondence as he directed, but have included a letter to Mina in shorthand, advising her of my plight. When the Count saw it...
How did this get here? It is a wild thing. An outrage upon friendship and hospitality. It is not signed. Well, so it cannot matter to us. This other letter to Hawkins, that I shall, of course, send, since it is yours, sir. Your letters are sacred to me. let me, before I forget, let me advise you, my dear young friend. Nay, let me warn you that should you leave these rooms, you will not by any chance go to sleep in any other part of the castle. It is old and has many memories, and there are bad dreams for those who sleep unwisely.
I shall not fear to sleep in any place where he is not. I have placed the crucifix over the head of my bed, and there it shall remain. I'm beginning to feel this nocturnal existence tell on me. It is destroying my nerve. God knows that there is ground for any terrible fear in this accursed place. But as I lean from my window, my eye is caught by something moving a story below me. The Count, emerging from the windows. He's crawling down the castle wall over that dreadful abyss, face down, with his cloak spreading out around him like great wings. What manner of man is this? What manner of creature is it in semblance of man? May 15th. Once more have I seen the Count go out in his bizarre fashion. I thought to use the opportunity to explore more than I have dared to do as yet.
Blast! This one may give. Come!
Another bedchamber.
Oh, tired.
Go on, you are the first. And we shall follow. Yours is the right to begin. He is young and strong. There are kisses for us all.
Strong and virile. Yes, I shall begin. Stand back, and I will go to him and kneel beside him.
Hold! How dare you touch him, any of you? How dare you cast eyes on him when I had forbidden it? Back! I tell you all, this man belongs to me.
You yourself never loved. You never love.
Now I promise that when I am through with him, you shall kiss him at your will. Now, go! Go! I must awaken him, for there is work to be done.
Tomorrow, my friend,
We must part. You return to your beautiful England. I to some work which may have such an end that we may never meet.
Well, why may I not go tonight?
Because, my dear sir, my coachman and horses are away on a mission.
But I would walk with pleasure. I want to go away at once.
And your baggage?
I do not care about it.
You English have a saying which is close to my heart, for its spirit is that which rules our boyars. Welcome the coming, speed the departing guest. Come with me, my dear young friend. Not an hour shall you wait in my house against your will, though sad am I at your going and that you so suddenly desire it. Here. Let me unlock the door.
I shall wait till morning. As I write this morning, locked in my room, Dracula's Zagani henchmen are loading their carts in the courtyard. They're leaving. I'm alone in the castle with those awful women. Oh, Mina is a woman, and there is naught in common. I shall not remain alone with them. I shall try to scale the castle wall. At least God's mercy is better than that of these monsters. And the precipice is steep and high. At its foot, a man may sleep as a man. Goodbye, all. Mina.
July 24, Whitby. Lucy met me at the station looking sweeter and lovelier than ever.
Mina!
Lucy!
Oh, Mina, how good it is to see you again.
And I can't tell you how I've been looking forward to this.
I too. Oh, Mina, remember the days when we were together always, when we tell all our secrets to each other and laughed and cried together?
It was wonderful, wasn't it? But we're not children anymore, Lucy, and our lives as women forbid many of the cherished moments that we used to share. I must work to live.
Then while you're on holiday, let us make the most of our time together.
Here, here.
Come, let us get your traps and catch a cab to our rooms. Once we get your things put away, I can show you Whitby in all its color. Let us go this way. I want to show you my favorite place to sit and relax. Oh, it's just that knoll past the church and beyond the graveyard.
Oh, yes, I see it.
So tell me, Mina, how does Jonathan enjoy the colorful Carpathian Mountains?
I am afraid I don't know.
You don't know? Hasn't he written?
No, he hasn't. And I am very worried about him. And so is dear Mr. Hawkins. If anything untoward...
Oh, don't be silly. I'm sure your Jonathan is only consumed by business and the mysterious East. He shall write presently, never fear.
I hope you are right. But while we're on the subject of fiancés, what is this you write me about your having to pick from among three beaux?
That is right, Mina. And I am engaged. And oh, to such a wonderful man.
Shall I know who he is? Or is it to be a secret?
You may know all. His name is Arthur Holmwood. Oh, he's so wonderful.
Holmwood? Why do I know that name?
His father is Lord Godalming.
Ah, yes. But do not the newspapers report that Lord Godalming is ill?
Very ill, I'm afraid. That is why Arthur can't be with us.
And is your mother yet ill, Lucy?
I'm afraid so. I suppose all happiness must be tinged with sorrow.
It seems to me that the truly sorrowful ones are those two leftover gentlemen of yours.
Oh, I feel sorry, truly, about it. They are such fine men. One of them is an American from Texas, a real adventurer named Quincy Morris. And the other is a Dr. John Seward, who's ever so clever. At his age, he is already in charge of a large mental asylum in London. You must know it. It's adjacent to that old property Jonathan is involved with.
Carfax?
Just so, Carfax. And he and Mr. Morris were so gallant. Oh, why can't they let a girl marry three men or as many as want her and save all this trouble?
You see, you are really very wicked.
Ah, here we are. Oh, I like to sit here by the cliffside on this bench.
It is a lovely view of the harbor.
You can see all the bay to where the headland stretches out to the sea.
And over there, on the other side, what is that magnificent old building?
That's Whitby Abbey. There's a legend that a white lady is seen in one of the windows.
A white lady? A ghost?
I hope so. Wouldn't it be exciting? But I don't know too much about it.
Well, let us ask this old fisherman. Maybe he knows.
Perchance he is a ghost himself. He looks over 100 years
Lucy,
old.
Lucy, do behave. Good day, sir.
Afternoon.
Pardon me, but can you tell us anything about the legend of the White Woman of Whitby Abbey?
Oh, I wouldn't fush myself about it, miss. They be all very well for comers and trippers and the like, but not for two nice young ladies like you.
Peter, he's really very nice.
I take it you put no stock in the stories, then?
Oh, nay. It be all fool talk, lock, stock, and barrel. They be all invented by parsons to scare folks and get them to do something that they don't other inclined to do. Oh, it makes me ireful to think of them.
Does it?
Aye, why, it's them that, not content with printing lies on paper and preaching them out of pulpits, does want to be cutting them on the tombstones.
Oh, Mr.
Swales, aye, name Swales.
Mr. Swales, you can't be serious. Surely these tombstones are not all wrong.
Read the one under your bench there.
Under the bench?
Yes, look, Minna, there is a slab with some writing on it under the seat. Sacred to the memory of George Cannon, who died in hope of glorious resurrection on July 29th, 1873, falling down the rocks at Kettleness. This tomb is erected by his sorrowing mother.
Strange for a grave to lie on this path instead of behind us in the graveyard.
Well, may you wonder at it.
Really, Mr. Swears, I don't see anything very funny in that.
Oh, you don't see anything funny? But that's because you don't know that the sorrowing mother was a Hellcat and that she hated him because he was a crooked. And he hated her so that he committed suicide. Now, isn't that stone at any rate a pack of lies?
Oh, why did you tell us of this? It is my favorite seat. I'd leave it. And now I find I must go on sitting over the grave of a suicide.
Oh, that won't harm you, my pretty thing. And it may make poor Geordie Cannon gladsome to have so trim a lass sitting on his lap. Afternoon.
If you ask me, I think he's daft. I wonder what John Seward in that asylum in London would do with him.
Since my rebuff by Lucy Westenra, nothing in the world seems of sufficient importance to be worth doing. As I knew that the only cure for this sort of thing was work, I went down among the patients. I picked one out who has afforded me a study of much interest. R. M. Renfield.
Good afternoon, Dr. Seward.
Renfield, what the devil are you doing?
But, Dr. Seward, you told me I could catch flies if I wished.
But everything in moderation, Renfield. I'm sorry, but I must insist on having them cleared from your room.
Cleared from the room? May I have 3 days? I shall clear them away.
That's reasonable, of course. But mind, if you don't get rid of them, I shall take matters into my own hands.
Rest assured that they will be gone, Dr. Seward.
He has turned his mind to spiders and keeps feeding them with his flies. They are now becoming as great a nuisance as his flies were.
Must I, Dr. Seward?
I'm afraid so, Renfield. At least you must clear out some of these spiders.
Then I can keep a few of them?
As long as it's a reasonable number. Shall we say 3 days as before?
Oh, certainly, Doctor. And thank you. Wait! Don't move!
What are you about now?
Blowfly. Ah, I've got it.
What are you doing?
Renfield! That's disgusting. On the contrary, the small insects are very good and very wholesome. Certain primitive tribes feed exclusively on cockroaches, don't you know?
You are not a bushman, Renfield.
But it's life. Strong life. It gives life to me.
This episode gave me an idea, or the rudiment of one. I must watch how he gets rid of his spiders. 8th of July. There is a method in his madness, and the rudimentary idea in my mind is growing. He has managed to get a sparrow and has already trained it. His means of taming is simple, for already the spiders have diminished. 19th of July. We are progressing. My friend has now a whole colony of sparrows, and his spiders are almost obliterated.
Oh, Dr. Seward, I need to speak to you about a favor, a very, very great favor. A kitten, a nice, sleek, playful kitten that I can play with and teach and feed and feed and feed.
Well, I'll see about it, Renfield. But tell me, wouldn't you rather have a cat than a kitten?
Oh, yes, I would like a cat. I only asked for a kitten lest you should refuse me a cat. No one would refuse me a kitten, would they?
Actually, Renfield, I doubt that it's possible at the moment.
Oh. Oh, I implore you, Doctor. You don't know how important this is to me. My entire salvation depends on...
I'm sorry, Renfield, but there is nothing to be done for it at present.
Oh, what am I to do? What am I to do? Good morning, Doctor.
What happened to all your birds, Renfield?
Birds? Oh, they just flew out the window.
Just flew out the window, did they?
Yes. I've decided to go back to flies. See, I'm scraping sugar onto the windowsill. That's how I trap them, you know.
The attendant has just been in to see me.
Oh, I'm sorry to disturb you, Doctor.
What is it?
Where's Winfield, sir? He's just been sick, something violent.
Sick? What do you make of it?
Well, sir, he threw up a mess of feathers. And my belief is, Doctor, that he's eaten his birds and that he just took them and ate them raw.
I gave Renfield a strong opiate. The man is an undeveloped homicidal maniac of a peculiar kind. I shall have to invent a new classification for him and call him a zoophagous maniac. He was going to larger animals by degrees until I refused him the cat. He then calmly closed his register and today began a new record by going back to flies. How many of us begin a new record with each day of our lives? To me, it seems only yesterday that my whole life ended, and that truly I began a new record. Oh, Lucy, I cannot be angry with you, nor can I be angry with my friend whose happiness is yours. But I must only wait on hopeless and work. If I only could have as strong a cause as my poor mad friend there, a good unselfish cause to make me work, that would be indeed happiness.
6th August. I am unhappy about Lucy and about Jonathan. It is a very gray day.
Good day, miss. Didn't expect to see you out here writing on a day like this.
It is rather bleak and threatening, isn't it?
Oh, that's the truth. There's a strange ship out there. And I'm afraid she's in trouble.
A ship? In these waters?
I can't make her out. She's a Russian by the look of her, but... She's knocking about in the queerest sort of way. Changes about with every puff of wind. We'll hear more of her before this time tomorrow, I warrant you.
All right, yeah. Telegraph this in, as I dictated. To the Daily Graph, from correspondent Alan Mycroft, Dateline Whitby, 8 August. One of the greatest and suddenest storms on record has just been experienced here, with results both strange and unique. With a rapidity which at the time seemed incredible, The whole aspect of nature at once became convulsed. Waves rose in growing fury, each overtopping its fellow, until, in a very few minutes, the lately glassy sea was like a roaring and devouring monster. It was found necessary to clear the entire piers from the mass of onlookers. Before long, the searchlight discovered some distance away a schooner with all sails set in terrible danger from nearby reefs. Amid suddenly shifting winds of gale force, the ship rushed towards shore at headlong speed and miraculously gained the safety of the harbor and pitched herself upon the strand. The searchlight followed her, and a shudder ran through all who saw her, for lashed to the helm was a corpse with drooping head, which swung horribly to and fro at each motion of the ship. No other form could be seen on deck at all. The ship had found the harbor unsteered, save by the hand of a dead man. There was, of course, a considerable concussion as the vessel drove up on the sand heap, but at the very moment the shore was touched, an immense dog sprang up on deck from below, jumped to the sand, made straight for the cliff where the churchyard hangs over the laneway, and disappeared into the darkness. And
storm's passing. Thank God. Must write a report.
Have you found out anything about the schooner?
Found some papers aboard. She's Russian. Name's Demeter. Only cargo's a number of great wooden boxes filled with mold.
Boxes of mold? How curious.
Cargo's consigned to a Whitby solicitor named Billington. Probably want to take possession in the morning.
Any sign of the dog?
Oh, the beast that leapt out of the ship?
That's right.
Can't find it.
Really?
Some SPCA folk went out for it, and all he saw was a dead mastiff belonging to one of the townspeople. Looked like it had been in a hard fight.
A fight with the dog from the ship?
It could be. Must be a fierce creature as well as big. The mastiff's throat was torn away and its belly was slit open as if with a savage claw.
Where was it found? The location may be a clue to where the dog was headed.
Found it right over the spot where the suicide is buried. Remember that suicide where they put that bench for the sightseers?
Ah, yes.
But the dog from the ship's probably miles away by now, hiding out in the moors. Miles away.
Lucy, wake up. Lucy.
Where am I?
You're out sitting on our bench, dear Lucy. You must have been sleepwalking again. Here, you'll catch your death. Oh, no telling how long you've been out here before I woke up and traced you here. Lucy, wake up, dear, and try to rise. Yeah, that's right. Come, put your arm round me. Can you walk?
Yes, sir.
Good. Now, I'll help you. I hope no one sees us with you practically stark naked on the cliff.
Nina. Oh, don't tell Mother, please. Her health, please.
All right, dear. Calm down and let's get home. God protect us. You are looking so much better now, Lucy. After 10 days and 10 nights of worry, I think your malady, whatever it is broken.
Yes. Oh, it must have been a trial to you.
Never that.
Trying to sneak out of the room at night and, oh, I don't know what other foolishness.
I even caught you several times before the open window cavorting with a bat sitting on the ledge.
Really? A bat? Oh, gracious. Do you remember the first night when you found me in my nightclothes out here on our seat?
Do I? Do you remember if you had dreamed that night?
I didn't quite dream, but it all seemed so real. I only wanted to be here, on this spot. I don't know why. I was afraid of something. I don't know what. I have a vague memory of something long and dark
with red eyes. Something very sweet and bitter all around me at once. And then I seemed sinking into deep green water, and there was a singing in my ears as I have heard there is to drown. My soul seemed to go from out my body and float about the air. And then there was a sort of agonizing feeling, as if I were in an earthquake. And I came back and found you shaking my body.
Let us go dress and see how your mother is doing, shall we?
Strange and sudden change in Renfield. About 2 this morning, the night watchman came to me, sent up from the ward to say that he had escaped. We traced him to the wall surrounding the grounds of Carfax.
I am here to do your bidding, master. I am your slave, and you will reward me, for I shall be faithful.
Careful. He doesn't seem to notice us, but proceed with caution.
I have worshipped you long and afar off, and now that you are near, I await your commands. And you will not pass me by, will you, dear master, in your distribution of good things?
Let me go! You don't count! Master's at hand!
Let me go!
I never saw a lunatic in such a paroxysm of rage before. He is safe now, at any rate. Jack Shepherd himself couldn't get free from the strait waistcoat that keeps him restrained, and he's chained to the wall in the padded room.
I shall be patient, master. It is coming. Coming. Coming.
In a moment, we will continue with Dracula. Dracula.
This is the South Carolina edge.
You see, he's safe. He's alive.
What is it?
Jonathan, he's all right.
Jonathan! Yes. Oh, thank God.
Oh, he's been ill. That's why he did not write. Look, Mr. Hawkins sent this to me this morning. He wrote so kindly himself and is sending me to Budapest.
Budapest?
Yes. Jonathan's in a hospital in Budapest recovering from a brain fever. Mr. Hawkins says it would not be a bad thing if we were to be married out there.
Oh, Mina.
I must pack.
Come on, get ready. I'll help you.
The case of Renfield grows even more interesting. 3 nights has the same thing happened. Violent all day, then quiet from moonrise to sunrise. I feel there is something ominous in his calm.
Jack, I must see you.
Arthur, what is it that brings you here so late?
It's Lucy, Jack. She's ill.
Ill?
I daren't speak to her mother, who is so ill herself that any agitation will only hasten the end.
I'll come at once. Just let me pack my gear. Dear Art, I am in grave doubt about Lucy's condition. I've written to my old friend and master, Professor Van Helsing of Amsterdam. He is one of the most advanced men of science of this day. Now that you've examined Lucy, Van Helsing, what do you think of her condition?
There's no time to lose. She will die of sheer want of blood to keep up the heart's action as it should be. There must be a transfusion at once.
Jack!
Arthur!
I was so anxious. I read between the lines of your letter. The dad is better, so I ran down to see her for myself.
Is this not Mr. Holmfoot?
Yes, and you must be Professor Van Helsing.
Yeah, yeah.
Yes, I'm so thankful to you, sir, for coming.
Yeah, sir, you have come in time. You are the lover of our dear miss. She is bad, very bad. You are to help her.
Yes, well, what can I do for her?
We must have a transfusion.
Gladly.
Good boy, John. You have the equipment.
Right here, Professor.
Mr. Holmwood, you must roll up your sleeve and come into Miss Lucy's room with us.
After the operation, Van Helsing cryptically advised Arthur to leave. When he had gone...
Tell me, what do you make of the mark on Miss Holt?
2 punctures.
Yeah.
Not large, not wholesome looking.
Mm.
Some trituration, possibly.
Yeah.
It's too small to account for such a loss of blood. I can't say I can make anything out of it.
Yeah, I must go back to Amsterdam tonight. There are books which I want. You must remain here all the night, and you must not let your sight pass from her.
But you can't watch over me every night.
Oh, don't you worry about that.
We shall see. But for tonight, I sleep.
Yeah, John. John, wake up, John. Yeah. And, how is our patient?
Oh, she looked good when I left her. I stayed up with her for two nights until last night. I was apparently so visibly tired that she insisted I get some rest.
Come, let us see. Good Timmy Hamer. Quickly, bring the brandy.
Oh, my God, she's had a relapse.
Oh, it's not too late. Her heart beats, though but feebly. All our work is undone. We must begin again. We must have another transfusion. You must be the donor this time. Hurry. And how is our patient this morning?
She appears much better.
Ah, excellent.
What is that, Professor? White flowers?
These are for you, Miss Lucy.
Oh, for me, Dr. Van
Helsing. Ah, my dear, you to play with? No, these are medicines.
Oh.
Now, you need not snub that charming nose, or I shall point out to my friend Arthur what woes he may have to endure in seeing so much beauty that he loves so much distort.
Oh, but these are common garlic. Oh, you're putting up a joke on me.
I never guessed there is grim purpose in this. I must put these about your room and make a garland for your neck. And do not disturb it. Even if the room should feel closed, do not tonight open a window or a door.
Well, Professor, it's well we have no skeptic here, or he would say that you are working some spell to keep out an evil spirit.
Perhaps I am. And the mother removed the garlic in the night?
Yes, the room was so close. Oh. He thought she was doing Lucy some good.
God, what have we done? The mother, all unknowing, does such thing as lose her daughter body and soul. And we must not tell her or warn her, or she die and then both die. Ah, how are all the powers of the devil against us? Come, we must see and act. Devils or no devils, today you must operate. I shall provide.
I write this and leave it to be seen so that no one may by any chance get into any trouble through me. This is an exact record of what took place tonight. I went to bed as usual, taking care that the flowers were placed as Dr. Van Helsing directed, and soon fell asleep. I was waked by the flapping at the window that I have heard so often. Mother looked in, and I begged her to come sit by me. Suddenly, Mother cried out in fright and clutching wildly tore the garlic from my neck. For a second, she sat up pointing at the wolf, but finally slumped over as if struck by lightning. The room and all seemed to spin around, and I remember no more for a while. It didn't seem long when I gained consciousness. And seeing my poor dead mother, I shouted out, alone with the dead. The air seems full of specks. Go! Shoot me from this night. I shall hide this paper in my breast, where they shall find it when they come to lay me out. My dear mother gone. It is time that I go too.
What are we to do, John? Where are we to turn for help? We must have another transfusion or that girl's life won't be worth an hour's purchase. You are exhausted already. I'm exhausted too. What are we to do for someone who will open his veins for...
Well, what's the matter with me, anyway?
Quincy Morris.
John Seward, you old brain poker.
Dr. Van Helsing, this is Quincy Morris. He's an American acquaintance of Lucy, Arthur, and myself.
I think I came just in the nick of time. You know you have only to tell me what to do.
A brave man's blood is the best thing on earth when a woman is in trouble. Come, there is no time to lose. Read this.
Oh, what is it?
I found it on Miss Lucy. Is that her handwriting?
Yes. What does it all mean?
Do not trouble about it now. You shall know and understand it all in good time.
Jack, is she really dead?
Yes, Art.
Jack, what shall I do?
Take it easy, old man.
I don't know how to thank you for all that you've done for her.
Well, gentlemen, we must talk.
Talk? What about?
I want you to give me permission to read all Miss Lucy's papers and letters.
Mm. Dr. Van Helsing, you may do what you will. I feel that in saying this, I am doing what my dear one would have approved. I shall not trouble you with questions till the time comes.
Mrs. Harker, is it not?
Yes.
That was Miss Mina Murray.
Yes.
It is Mina Murray that I have come to see, that was friend of that poor dear child, Lucy Vestenra. Madam Mina, it is on account of the icon.
Sir, you could have no better claim on me than that you were a friend and helper of Lucy Vestenra.
I have read your letters to Miss Lucy.
My letters? Yeah.
Forgive me, but I had to inquire somewhere. I know that you were with her at Whitby. In great perplexity, I come to you and out of your so much kindness to tell me all of what happened there that you remember, please.
I can tell you, I think, Dr. Van Helsing, all about it.
Ah.
I wrote it all down at the time. I can show it to you if you like.
Oh, Madam Mina, I will be grateful.
Here, read it over whilst I order lunch.
Ah, thank you. Oh, Madam Mina, Madam Mina, this paper is sunshine. It will pleasure and delight if I may serve you as a friend. And your husband, tell me of him. Is he quite well?
He was almost recovered. But he has been greatly upset by Mr. Hawkins' death.
Mr. Hawkins is your husband's late employer?
Employer and friend. He gave us everything. This house, his business. He treated Jonathan like a son and was training him for the partnership when his age overtook him. And he died suddenly in the night.
I see.
Jonathan never did quite regain his old confidence and ardor. But I suppose this upset him, for when we were in town on Thursday last, he had a sort of shock.
A shock, and after brain fever so soon. What kind of shock was it, please?
He thought he saw someone who recalled something terrible, something which led to his brain fever.
Do you know the nature of this terrible something?
Yes, I do. Oh, doctor... I have read Jonathan's journal, the one he kept in shorthand during his entire stay in Transylvania. It was there after unspeakable horrors, that this illness came upon him. Doctor, you are a man of science, a man of medicine. Can't you help my poor husband? Please... Please make him well again.
Cool, Madam Mina. Your husband cannot be helped unless you, his wife, are strong. You must be strong.
I'll try.
There now. Madam Mina, my life is a barren and lonely one. But since I have been summoned here, I have known so many good people and seen so much nobility that I feel more than ever. And it has grown since my advancing years, the loneliness of my life. And you have given me hope. Hope not in what I'm seeking of, but that there are good women still left to make life happy. Yeah. I'm glad. Glad that I may be here of some use to you.
Thank you. Thank you. You have taken a weight off my mind. If you will let me, I shall give you a paper to read. It is long, but I have typewritten it out. It is a copy of his journal abroad and all that happened.
I promise I will read and return tomorrow to speak to you and he. You need not worry, for I'm quite convinced that every word of that journal is the truth.
I did see the Count in town the other day.
It's incredible and frightening to know he's in London.
But right now, let us concern ourselves with Mr. Harker, Madame Mina.
I think you have cured me already. I was in doubt of my own senses. But now that veil is lifted from my eyes, and I can see again and act.
If that is true, may I ask you for some help? I have a great task to do, and at the beginning of it is to know. Can you tell me what went before your going to Transylvania?
Now, look here, sir. Does what you have to do concern the Count?
It does.
Then I'm with you, heart and soul. I shall get the bundle of papers. You can take them with you and read them in the train to town.
Excellent. Perhaps you will, if I send for you and take Madame Mina too.
We shall both come when you will.
Then, excuse me, but something caught my eye in your newspaper. May I see?
Oh, certainly.
You. Mein Gott, so soon.
Professor, whatever is the matter?
I must go back to London. There's no time to lose.
Well, I'll go and get the papers for you.
Quickly, I am needed immediately.
26th of September. I was settling down to work with enthusiasm so that I might fairly have said that the wound which poor Lucy left on me was becoming cicatrized. Everything is, however, now reopened. And what is to be the end, God only knows. Today, Von Helsing almost bounded into my room and thrust last night's Westminster Gazette into my hand.
What do you think of the new story?
During the past two or three days in the neighborhood of Hampstead, cases have occurred of young children straying from home sometimes overnight. Well?
Read on.
In all these cases, the children said that they had been with a bloofer lady. All have been slightly torn or wounded at the throat.
Well.
It's like Lucy's wound.
And what do you make of it?
Well, there's some cause in common. Whatever injured her has injured them.
That is true indirectly, but not directly.
How do you mean?
They were made by Miss Lucy herself.
29th of September. Last night, at a little before 10, Arthur and Quincy came into Van Helsing's room where we were waiting.
You were doubtless surprised by my letter.
I was.
I want your permission to do what I think good this night. It is, I know, much to ask. But I must ask you to promise me in the dark, so that afterwards, though you may be angry with me for a time, you shall not blame yourselves for anything.
Well, that's frank, anyhow. I'll answer for the professor. I don't quite see his drift, but I swear he's honest. And that's good enough for me.
Dr. Van Helsing, I don't like to buy a pig in a poke, as they say in Scotland. And if it be anything in which my honor as a gentleman or my faith as a Christian is concerned, I cannot make such a promise.
I accept your limitation.
May I ask what it is we are to do?
I want you to come with John and me and to come in secret to the churchyard in Kingstead.
Where poor Lucy is buried? And when there...
To enter the tomb.
It was just a quarter before 12 when we got into the churchyard. We entered the tomb.
John, you were here with me yesterday. Was the body of Miss Lucy in the coffin?
It was.
You hear from the lips of one who does not believe me. Open the coffin.
Give me a hand here, Quincy.
Oh, sure enough.
My God, it's empty.
Professor, I answered for you. Now, your word is all I want. Is this your doing?
2 nights ago, my friend Seward and I came here with good purpose, believe me. Yeah, I opened this coffin and we found it as now. Empty. We then waited and saw something white come through the trees. The next day, we came here in daytime, and she lay there. Did she not, friend John?
Yes.
That night, we were just in time. One more child was missing, and we find it, thank God, unharmed amongst the graves.
I can't believe it.
Hold on, Art. What now, Professor?
We must close the tomb. Come.
We sealed the tomb and hid ourselves outside.
How long must we wait here, Professor?
Be patient, Art.
Shh, shh. Look, somebody's coming this way.
Dressed in white.
Good Lord, it's Lucy.
Step forward, gentlemen.
Oh, there's blood on her lips.
That bundle in her arms.
It's a child.
Shh, shh. She sees us.
Look, she dropped the tire.
To me, Arthur. Leave those others and come to me. My arms are hungry for you. Come, and we can rest together. Come, my husband, come!
Don't proceed any closer.
Something's wrong with Arthur. Look at his eyes.
Go back, I say. Try to trespass this.
A crucible. No!
She jumped back at the sight of it.
There she goes toward the tomb.
But no, my friend Arthur. Am I to proceed with my work?
Do as you will, my friend. Do as you will.
Yeah, you see, she rests in her coffin. You have the books. Read with me. Dies irae, dies illa, solvet saeclum. In favitum, teste David cum Sibylla, quantus tremor, quando iudex est venturus, cum castrique discursuris, tuba mirum.
In a moment, the conclusion of Dracula. Now, the...
30 September. When we met in Dr. Seward's study, we unconsciously formed a sort of board or committee.
I say we join together from our shared sorrows to turn them to a shared resolve to hunt the demon... For to destroy you.
But shouldn't we go to the police?
You think Scotland Yard would swallow this? Well, Dutchman, I don't need much time to make up my mind. I'm game.
Jonathan?
Mina and I agree.
Lord Godalming?
Nothing would please me more than to destroy this menace.
Yeah. And so, we are now all acquainted with the facts of the case. Mr. Harker, you know the where of Count Dracula's estate?
Yes. It is the Carfax place. It's visible from these windows.
Carfax. I should have known it was so close by the behavior of Renfield, one of my lunatics. I see now he must be in Dracula's power.
If only we had known this in time, we may have been able to save poor Lucy.
Well, I've traced the boxes that he sent here aboard the Demeter, and I can tell you that, according to the bill of lading, they contain soil for, and I quote, experimental purposes. There were 50 of them. They're all at Carfax.
Not anymore.
How do you mean?
Some of the crates have been removed. When the workmen came to cart them off, Renfield made a fearful row, yelling something that his master was deserting him. And he broke loose to attack the carters.
We must locate the boxes.
Well, I shall try to see the carter who took them away from Carfax.
This could be very important. The vampire must sleep in the soil of his native land. He has removed some of the crates, probably to many spots in the area.
To facilitate his movements?
Yeah, very likely, friend Quincy. We must find them and sterilize them now.
Just as we were then about to leave the house, I received an urgent message that Renfield needed to see me at once. we all went down to his room.
Ah, good evening, Dr. Seward.
Renfield, I've brought some friends with me. Lord Godalming.
Mr. Renfield. Lord Godalming. I had the honor of seconding your father at the Wyndham. I grieve to know by your holding of the title that he is no more. My condolences.
Why, thank you.
Mr. Quincy Morris of Texas, Mr. Renfield.
Harry?
Mr. Morris, you should be very proud of your great state. Its reception into the Union was a precedent which may have far-reaching effects hereafter.
Professor Van Helsing.
What shall any man say of his pleasure at meeting Van Helsing? When an individual has revolutionized therapeutics...
Too much honor, Mr. Renfield.
You gentlemen, I take to witness that I am as sane as at least the majority of men who are in full possession of their liberties. And I am sure that you, Dr. Seward, will deem it a moral duty to deal with me as one to be considered as under exceptional circumstances.
Don't this beat all?
Well, yes, Renfield, you seem to be improving very rapidly. I shall have the opportunity to have a long chat with you in the morning, at which time...
But I fear that you hardly apprehend my wish. I desire to go at once. This very moment, if I may. I'm sure it is only necessary to put before you so simple yet so momentous a wish to ensure its fulfillment. Is it possible that I have erred in my supposition?
You have.
Let me entreat you, Dr. Seward. Let me implore you to let me out of this house at once. Or keep me manacled and in jail, but let me go out of this. Don't you know that I'm no lunatic in a mad fit, but a sane man fighting for a soul? Let me go. Let me
no
go.
No more of this. Get to your bed and try to behave more discreetly.
You will, I trust, Dr. Seward, do me the justice to bear in mind later on that I did what I could to convince you tonight.
We forced our way into Carfax, only to find 29 boxes left out of the 50. We returned, and I found Mina asleep. She looks paler than usual.
Rats! 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 Thousands of them! Millions! All these will I give you! All these! Rats! Rats!
We've operated, and I think we've saved him. He may regain consciousness at any minute.
Tell me what happened.
I don't really know. I found him lying in a pool of his own blood. His back was broken, and his face was marked as if it had been slammed several times on the ground.
You're more than likely the Count has visited him in the night. He is here, and we know his purpose. Let us get Arthur and Quincy and go to the Harker's room.
I had considerable trouble sleeping, even with the sleeping draught from Seward. But finally, after a struggle, I dozed off and did not even notice Jonathan getting into bed beside me. I woke with a start and noticed a thin white mist in the room. A vague horror struck me, and I tried to wake Jonathan, but to no avail. I looked up and saw beside the bed as if he had stepped out of the mist.
You must speak. If you make a sound, I shall take your husband and dash his brains out before your very eyes.
With a mocking smile, he held me tight and bared my throat.
First, a little refreshment to reward my exertions.
I was bewildered and strangely did not want to hinder him. And he placed his reeking lips upon my throat.
So, you, like the others, would play your brains against mine. Now you, their best beloved one, are now to me flesh of my flesh. Blood of my blood. My bountiful wine press. Later you shall be my companion and my helper. You shall be avenged in your turn
for not one of them shall but minister to your needs.
With that, he pulled open his shirt, and with his long, sharp nails and vein in his breast, when the blood began to spurt, he pressed my mouth to the wound so that I must either suffocate or swallow some of the...
You stand back from her!
Careful, Desmond.
Hold up the envelope, Van Helsing.
Do you know what is in here, Dracula? It is the host.
It's working. He's moving away from Mina.
What's wrong with Harker? What's Dracula doing?
Where is he?
He's turning into a mist to thwart us.
Now the mist is seeping out.
He's gone. See to Mina, Jonathan.
Jonathan, you have found out this afternoon about the where of the missing crates?
I came up with an address in Piccadilly.
If we can break in there and sterilize the rest of the boxes, we'll have him.
Maybe, maybe no. The Count may have many houses which he has bought.
Well, we must search the place for clues, that's for sure.
Well, let's go at once.
One moment more. Madame Mina, you are quite safe here until the sunset. And before then, we shall return. But just in case, on your forehead, I touch the sacred wafer. In nomine Patris et Filii et Spiritus.
Mina, my darling, Mina!
The wafer's burned her flesh as if there were a white-hot branding iron.
Mina.
Unclean.
We entered Carfax without trouble. We sterilized the boxes that were there with Van Helsing's religious objects. Later, we had no trouble breaking into the house in Piccadilly.
This place smells vile.
There are 8 boxes here.
The Count is not about.
My God. We must find the missing crates.
Here, look here on the table. All the Count's papers and a set of keys.
These seem to be titles to his other properties. There's one at Mile End and Bermondsey.
What's this? Paper, pens, ink?
Of course, since it is so centrally located, Dracula used this house for headquarters.
And these keys are to his other properties, I'll wager.
I say, I have a plan.
What is it?
You and Van Helsing stay here to finish off these crates of earth. Quincy and I will go to the houses in the east and the south and dispose of the ones there.
Excellent.
4 October. The men disposed of the boxes but found no trace of the Count. But that very night, I had an idea that the bond so lately and foully formed between Dracula and myself could possibly be penetrated to our advantage. I induced Professor Van Helsing to put me under hypnosis.
Madam Mina, can you hear me?
Yes.
Where are you now?
I do not know. It is all strange to me.
What do you see?
I can see nothing. It is all dark.
What do you hear?
The lapping of water.
Then you are on a ship.
Oh, yes.
What else do you hear?
The sound of men stamping as they run about. There's the creaking of a chain and a loud noise as the check of the capstan falls into the ratchet.
What are you doing?
I am still. Oh, so still. It is like death.
My friends, Dracula's returned to Transylvania. He can live for centuries, and Miss Mina's but a mortal woman. Time is now to be dreaded, since once he put that mark upon her throat, 100 years hence he may waken her to take possession of her soul. We must try to overtake Dracula in his own land.
October 30. While Dracula traveled slowly on water and we made our way swiftly on land, he cleverly eluded us, using his powers to reach into my mind to discover our whereabouts and using them again to reroute the ship. We discovered our predicament in gallops.
I shall get a steam launch and follow him.
And I horses to follow on the bank, lest by chance he land.
Good, but neither must go alone.
I'll go with Quincy. We've been accustomed to hunt together.
Still know how to use a Winchester, Jack?
Try me.
And you, friend Jonathan, must, because of your strength and youth compared to mine, accompany Arthur on the launch.
5 November. This is to my old and true friend, John Seward, in case I may not see him again. Near sundown, Madam Mina and I came upon the Castle Dracula and made camp. Then, ere the dark came upon us, I drew a ring so big for her comfort round where Madam Mina sat, and over the ring I passed some of the wafer. To test her what she could do, I asked her to come over by the fire.
I can't move. I can't seem to go without the bounds of this circle you have drawn.
I rejoice, for I knew that if she cannot get out, none of those we dread could get in. And so we remain until dawn. I will strengthen me with breakfast, and then I will try to my terrible work at the Castle Dracula. Madam Mina sleeps, and thank God, she is calm in her sleep. Now I go to put at peace the wives of Dracula.
Abraham Van Helsing. Yes, I am awake. Though powerless to stop you, I am at your mercy. Naked and helpless in my earthen bed. Do I look so menacing to you in the daytime? You have slain my sisters. But can you lift your dreaded hammer to drive that spike to my heart? Did you not hesitate before, my sisters? Can you a third time force yourself to such a grisly task? Is that what fighting evil is to you? Murdering 3 helpless women, turning beauty into ruin. Are you not weary after all this fighting, this striving against us? You are so lonely, so old. Will you fight still and keep fighting into your grave? Spare me, Abraham Van Helsing. Spare me. And I promise to spare you from a lonely death. You pause. Your eyes moisten. You cannot do it. You falter. Yes, Abraham, I can promise you eternity. With not one wife, but 2. Not just myself. You can take her whom you love already. Mina Harker.
Doctor, I'm so glad you have returned from that dreadful castle.
Certainly, the sun is set very soon. The vampire power will become too strong.
Oh, you must rest. I'm afraid you have endured too much.
Must not think of me, madam.
All right, then. Let's come away from this awful place and go to meet my husband, who is, I know, coming toward us.
Wait. Do you hear that? We must find shelter against attack.
Wolves coming closer. Dracula's near. Where are the others?
Look, Madam Mina.
What is it?
Over there.
Why, it's men on horseback. It looks like gypsies by the clothing. And isn't that a cart of some kind?
Is the Tsaganya henchman of our foe? They are taking him to the castle.
Oh, no.
It is soon night. Once safe in his lair, we will be powerless against him. At least here, you shall be safe within the circle.
They're racing to reach the castle before the sun sets.
Without a doubt. But look, there. Two horsemen follow fast.
And there on the slope, two more.
Quick, dismount. Quick, the sun is setting. Harker, you got that big knife.
That's right, here.
And I got my bowie. Jack, you and Art keep them covered.
Jonathan!
Nina! It's Mrs. Hawke and Van Helsing. Thank God they're safe.
Watch out, Quincy. Oh, get back! Did you get you, Quincy?
Yeah, got me in the side with that blade of his. Don't try any more of that funny stuff, you gypsy devil, or I'll do more and knock you down. Come on, let's get that case open.
The sun was almost down, and the shadows of the whole group fell long upon the snow. Jonathan, with desperate energy, attacked one side of the chest, attempting to pry off the lid. Mr. Morris went at the other side with his bowie. I saw the Count lying within the box. His eyes saw the sinking sun, and the look of hate in them turned to triumph. But in that instant came the sweep and flash of Jonathan's great knife shearing through the throat as Mr. Morris's bowie plunged into the heart.
No!
Mr. Morris had sunk to the ground. I fled to him.
I'm afraid he's done for.
I'm only too happy to have been of any servant. Oh, God.
And to our bitter grief, with a smile and in silence, he died.
Seven years ago, we all went through the flames. And the happiness of some of us since then is, we think, well worth the pain we endured. It is an added joy to Mina and to me that our boy's birthday is the same day as that on which Quincy Morris died. We call our son Quincy. Godalming and Seward are both happily married, and in looking over our various journals and notebooks, we find practically no authentic document except for several clippings. We could hardly ask anyone to accept these as proofs of so wild a story. Van Helsing summed it up as he said, with our boy on his knee, "We want no proofs. This boy will someday know what a brave and gallant woman his mother is. Already he knows her sweetness and loving care. Later on, he will understand how some men so loved her that they did dare much for her sake." Well, I think that about wraps it up, doesn't it?
Well, that took long enough. What time is it?
Let me just take the cylinder off and I shall check.
No, that's all right. I've got my pocket watch. It's exactly midnight, my dear.
You have been listening to the National Radio Theater of Chicago production of Bram Stoker's Dracula, dramatized, produced, and directed by Yuri Rozovsky. You have heard Nicholas Ruddle as Harker, Sherry Nerins as Mina, Ian Williams as Seward, Diane Ruddle as Lucy, James Deuter as Renfield, Vern Piven as Van Helsing, Tony Lincoln as Quincy, Colin Stinton as Arthur, and Miklos Simon as Dracula, with Karen Elise Swanson, Michelle M. Faith, and Elizabeth Geist. The program was made possible in part by a grant from the Illinois Arts Council and was produced with the cooperation of WFMT Chicago. I am John DeRemus.